Welcome back, everyone, to the Risk Intel Podcast, powered by SRA, where we share risk intelligence from experts across the banking industry. I'm your host, Ed Vincent, Executive Vice President at SRA. Welcome to the Risk Intel Podcast. I'm Ed Vincent. With me today is CEO and co-founder of Strategic Risk Associates, Michael Glotz.
Hey, it's great to be with you, Ed.
Michael, thanks for being back with us here today. We appreciate it. Michael, when you began SRA 15 plus years ago, you had views of what enterprise risk management entailed. And then that formed the basis for the creation of Watchtower, SRA's holistic risk intelligence platform. Within there, you built it to encompass 8 categories of risk. So can you take us through that journey of how you came up with that vision, what it's based upon? And then we can dig into some of those categories of risk and talk a little bit about weightings and the relative importance of one category versus another. But maybe take us a step back to, why those 8 categories? What do they represent?
Well, Ed, great question. And first of all, those 8 categories of risk represent collectively all risk holistically at the bank. So that's really the secret. And whether you put them in 8 categories or you put them in 10 or 15 categories, that's really up to you. But making sure all the risks that impact earnings and capital are captured in those 8 risks. And fortunately for me, Ed, both the Fed, the FDIC, the OCC all have defined those risk categories. Some have 6 categories, some have 8 categories, but they're all about the same categories. So I thought, hey, the regulators are defining risk so that they holistically roll up into those 6 to 8 categories. How about we do the same thing? And then let's give our customers a little flexibility to add more or to lead from there. So you'll find those 8 categories is very common throughout the banking industry, even in credit unions. And those are strategic and reputational risk. You have credit and liquidity risk, market risk, legal risk. Sometimes the FDIC likes to have legal risk. The OCC considers that compliance risk. And then you have your compliance risk, your operational risk. So those are the main categories that 99% of the banks across the country track and manage.
All right. So it sounds like that is regulatory driven and informed. But the key premise there is that it represents a holistic view of the bank. And so whether you look at it, as you said, in 6, 8, or 10 categories or groupings, the point is that you are looking at risk across the spectrum within an organization. Can you talk a little bit about the decisions around different weightings, right? Why you would weight one risk area in one category different than another, right? That's been a hot topic in particular recently around liquidity and credit. But talk a bit about that weighting decision as well, and whether that is standard, kind of by the book, or whether that really is driven by an individual bank.
Yeah, and the weighting concept comes into play when you want to take those 8 risk categories and know what your composite risk is, kind of the total holistic risk of the bank. And each risk category stands on its own from a rating perspective, but to get that overall risk of the bank, almost like your own individual FICO score, you have a lot of different categories within your FICO score, but you have one overall particular rating. And, what that weighting is trying to represent is kind of the amount of risk in each one of those categories. For instance, in most banks, credit risk, if you look back historically, have the most impact on earnings and capital. So typically that's weighted the highest. And recently, liquidity risk, you look at Silicon Valley Bank, Signature Bank, has had a great impact. So it's looking historically at how much risk the bank has in various areas. Some people use their capital stress testing process to weight and allocate the risk in between categories. That's one other way to do it. But at the end of the day, what you're trying to get to is how much impact does compliance have, risk have relative to liquidity risk, and forming that overall composite risk. And I just wanted to, step back for one quick second. And the risk, again, is really designating how the impact on accomplishing your strategic plan or your strategic objectives. So the risk of what, a lot of people ask, well, it's the risk of not accomplishing your strategic goals and your strategic objectives. So when it's high risk, it means there's a high likelihood you won't accomplish your strategic goals. If it's low risk, there's a low risk that you won't accomplish your strategic goals from that perspective, Ed.
It's a very important point there to help people understand the level of exposure in a given area and the importance of evaluating risk in a given area. You talked a bit about the weightings concept there. How much would you say that is a set it and forget it versus something that you should reevaluate on a whether it's annual or every couple of years? I mean, is that weighting when you think about that composite score? Is that weighting dynamic? Will it change over time for a bank?
A good question. I would say, Ed, probably 90 to 95% of the banks in the country don't have a weighting. What they do is they look at the risk score for their different risk categories, and then they kind of say, this kind of feels like a moderate risk for the bank. So it's kind of a gut feel. It's like, I think we're moderate. So there's not a formula that's underneath it to make it objective. It's more subjective. It's a challenge that banks have in explaining that weight. And as a matter of fact, when you ask a chief risk officer, can you explain to me how you got the total risk of the bank? It's like, well, it just seemed like we had a few reds here, we had a few yellows. So the weighting brings some discipline to your process. It allows you to look at the different risk categories and really question the impact that it might have on, earnings or capital. And it gives you, and it's dynamic. It changes over time. Doesn't usually change, greatly from a month-to-month standpoint. I would say a good discipline would be reviewing those weightings on an annual basis is a really good discipline, when you're updating your strategic plan and you're doing your capital stress testing. How much your capital are you allocating to each of the major risks? And you can use those same percentages on the weightings, bringing it back to that risk. But I would also say that, sometimes if there's a structural issue in your bank, like you sold off a division, bought another bank, or you had some major losses on in your credit portfolio and they're growing, that's the time to just for the board to say, hey, I know it's mid-year. Let's take some time, team, to step back and look at our weightings. And I now have a sense that credit is a bigger risk. Let's go back and look at what the overall rating of the bank is. So once a year is probably a good discipline. Most banks won't change that much on the weightings on even on a year to year, or a major event occurs. That's another good reason to do that, Ed.
But you talked about different groupings or categories there. I know strategic risk was one, and you talked about how risk is really evaluating the impact of a bank's ability to accomplish its strategic goals. Can you talk a little bit more about the concept of strategic risk?
Yeah, and strategic risk is one of my favorite risk categories. As a matter of fact, that's how the name of our company came about at Strategic Risk Associates. And what most people don't know is that strategic risk is the biggest driver of earnings, misses or capital misses. And I would say credit risk in banks is probably the second biggest driver. And at some point in the cycle, credit risk, in a recession might become the biggest driver. But strategic risk takes into account really those external factors to the organization. What's happening in the economy? Is the economy correcting? Look at the impact on, an economic recession on a bank. They're laying off employees. Look at what's happened lately. $1 trillion in deposits have run out of the banking system, because people can get, more margin elsewhere or a bigger return elsewhere. It's also looking not only at economic, but looking at your competition. Is somebody entering your market? Are they taking your depositors away? Do they have a better loan product? And then really the quality of your management team is one of the biggest drivers. A really good, solid management team can ensure good earnings growth for a long time. A poor management team with a poor culture is destined to disappoint. And I would say the board is part of that as well. Does it have a good board? Does it have a good management team? Do they have a good strategic planning process, or are they winging it? A lot of my small bank friends, update their strategic plan once a year because the regulators expect them to do that. In fact, that strategic plan is critical to, to really the vision of the organization, and really should be updated because that's your roadmap for success. And then lastly, there's lots of other kind of external factors, like a pandemic, that might impact you. Or in some cases with Florida banks, it could even be an environmental issue like a hurricane that wipes out your area. But interestingly enough, the regulators, especially the OCC, like to see quality. How effective is your risk management program? How effective is your risk maturity, your risk infrastructure? That's strategic, because if you have that as strong foundational throughout the bank, it prevents the downside. So a lot of times, quality of your risk management, holistically, your risk framework, your risk maturity, is part of your strategic risk category. It might also be in your other risk categories, but it's housed overall. More and more, we're seeing the quality of your internal audit function, which is the third line, falling in strategic. And if it's really well done, it'll help save you from a strategic risk perspective, Ed.
Strategic risk then is clearly a very important category or group of risks that you look at across the organization. Any other areas that you want to highlight, Michael, in terms of the risk categories that we have not covered here today?
I might just mention one other, because Ed, I know we're going to be doing a kind of a deep dive on each one of these risk categories. The one that gets not as much attention is reputational risk. And reputational risk is generally what happens when there's a failure within the bank in some way. And then the risk accrues. One big example of that is if there's a massive cybersecurity breach. Of course, the bank is going to correct that, invest in it, fix it. But when your depositors lose confidence in the bank and they move their deposits to other banks, that's a reputational risk. And as a matter of fact, what we've seen with Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank was a liquidity issue, but the fact that the banks were overly concentrated in technology companies led to a reputational risk that kind of hand in hand went with the liquidity issue. So reputational risk is one of the unique ones where it's a result of another risk issue within the bank. And it's how the market reacts to those risks or their perceived risk in the organization. So that's my second favorite risk category of them all, Ed.
Well, Michael, as you said, we're going to drill down into those, into SRA's view or groupings of those risk categories in subsequent episodes. Today, though, we appreciated your perspectives there on the drivers behind how SRA thinks about those categories of risk, right? Being really regulatory driven and informed, but most importantly, being holistic in terms of looking at risk across the organization. The drill down into the weightings and the composite concepts as well, and the importance of evaluating that on an annual basis, as well as understanding, kind of helicoptering back for a second, the fact that risk is the ability of an organization to achieve its strategic goals and objectives, and the importance of understanding things like strategic risk, reputational risk, and the other categories of risk. Are topics that we will drill into in subsequent episodes. So, Michael, thank you very much for this introduction, if you will, to the categories of risk today. We appreciate it and look forward to diving deeper into each of the subsequent pieces in future episodes. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ed.
For more information on SRA, please visit srarisk.com. Watch or listen to our weekly Risk Intel podcast series, or follow us on LinkedIn to learn more.